right, and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Snack Time with Mike and Ant. I'm one of your co-hosts, Ant Testator, a writer of names and flavor text for Wizards of the Coast and articles at Gathering Magic. With me, as always, interrupting me, as always, is the one and only super flavorful master of wiener dogs, Mr. Mike Linneman.
You didn't say Wiens. I'm actually going to be heading near Wien, which is Vienna, as the Germans call it, in about 2 weeks here. I'm going to go visit a bunch of Christmas markets. But no one cares about hearing about what we have to say today, Ant. You know, we're great, but fine.
Nope.
We got a guest.
That's right.
We got a big guest.
That's
right. We got a big guest, Ant. We have an artist that, honestly, real talk, I've been wanting to interview for since Trick Jarrett hired me at Gathering Magic. I just have never gotten around to it or haven't got cross-streamed, and I'm super excited today. Ant, who do we got on the show?
So today on the show, for everyone, we have the one and only Mr. Tom Tom Vanerstrand. Did I say it right?
Yeah, you almost got it right. Hi, everyone.
I went for the Swedish version, and I failed. Just butchered it.
So Tom's on the show who one of the earliest artists of Magic the Gathering, still works at Wizards of the Coast, which we'll get to. And before the show, we asked, how do you pronounce your last name? And in doing so, I was waiting for Ant to mess it up even after we heard, which is just phenomenal.
It's like a flaw. I can't. So, Tom, to put this in perspective, my entire life, people have messed my last name up. And I try so hard to make sure that I know how to say other people's names because it's something that's always bothered me. And for some reason on this cast, I just cannot do it. I can't.
Yeah, you know, it's okay. as a Swedish American, I don't mind if people pronounce my last name with the American version, which would be Vanerstrand.
Vanerstrand, yes.
Yeah, but you can do the Vanerstrand too if you want. It's all Swedish, right?
This is so much fun. I'm sure all the three Swedish fans we have are just going to be freaking out. So, again, to start out Snack Time episodes, we got to start with the flavor gem. To ease into this, I'm going to pick one of Tom's artworks. Makes sense, right? And the piece I took was Barl's Cage. You know, old school, the dark, 4-drop artifact. Can make a creature not untap just by paying 3. I really like the art of this because if you weren't around in the 80s, this artwork doesn't mean anything to you. You're like, oh, it's a cage. Okay, get it. But if you were, this relates to a movie. Tom, what's the movie this is from?
Well, it actually, you know, it may relate in your mind to a movie, but it actually is centered around a nightmare that I had.
What? So this is from Time Bandits.
It is from Time Bandits, yes. And that is probably where my nightmare originated. But I actually had a very vivid nightmare sometime before I painted this piece. And it centered around that being captured and lonely in a dark cavern, suspended in the middle of nowhere, inside a cage, a la Time Bandits. So
Time Bandits. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. So this is literally
for
a nightmare.
For those of us
piece.
Who were born in the 1990s, what is Time Bandits?
oh my God. So Time Bandits is this, it's such a cheesy 80s movie that goes about, they go through time fighting this wizard and their dwarves. And that's all I'm going to say. It is worth it to get Netflix to sit down with a friend, significant other, and watch this film because it's of that genre of Willow and any of the cheesy Ewok movies. And it's well worth your time. So that's all I'm going to say about it. It's kind of a cult classic, and it is super cheesy. But it's entertaining. You will like it.
Yeah, you know, in the 80s, we were pretty hard up for good fantasy movies. So things like Time Bandits rose to the top.
I mean, not really that many to pick from that were, you know, award-winning like the early 2000s, but, you know.
Yeah, you know, we had like the first Conan movie, you know, a couple others maybe.
That's a good one.
All right, so Ant, what are you picking for today?
All right, so I picked City of Shadows. And the reason I picked this is just because this is another card from the dark. I picked this one because I love the way that this town looks abandoned at card size. Like, that alone to me is so incredible because, you know, when you're painting a whole bunch of buildings or trying to draw, you know, a cityscape, like, it's kind of hard to make it look like there's nobody there. But this town really looks like it just hasn't seen any you know, individual running through in a long time. And it just kind of adds to that whole kind of mystery of a city of shadows and what I would expect out of a card like that. And I also kind of picked it because it's a pet card of mine, and I put it in every assassin deck that I ever make.
So. Awesome. Yeah, that piece is very popular. There's quite a few people that like that one. And it's kind of an homage to one of my favorite artists, Ian Miller.
Sure.
And his very fantastic pen and ink drawings of these amazing castles that are suspended on the sides of cliffs, etc.
Has been known for that. I wish Ian could come back too. Tom, what do you got for us? What do you pick? We kept you for last. You can see kind of how we went through it. Well, what do you got?
My pick is the Arena of the Ancients, which was a piece that I did for the Legends expansion way back. And I really like this piece. I actually did a model of it in clay.
Oh, really?
Years before. And so I had this, and it was based on some photographs that I had of some ruins in Turkey or Syria or someplace like that. And I did this model out of clay, and then I used that model as a model for my the eventual illustration. Back in those days, you know, we didn't have a lot of time to paint these things too. That's my excuse for some of the poor quality. But we literally, you know, we would get assigned some work and then have to turn it over within very short period of time, you know, a few days in some cases. And so I had to pick something that, and we just got a title too, you know, back in those days. There wasn't a lot of flavor associated with it. Kind of the art director, you would usually let us freeform, you know, a little bit. And so I took this old clay model that I had done based again on a photograph, and then I did this painting. And what was really cool about it is that years later, I went to an event in Europe over there signing cards at an event, and I think it was in the Netherlands, and they had built a full-scale Arena of the Ancients as a stage for their for a tournament that they were holding there.
Oh, wow.
Which was pretty awesome. So it was kind of nice to see that piece, you know, start out as this little small scale thing, and then an illustration, and then this full scale thing, you know, was kind of the natural progression. So that was pretty cool.
What was that like to be able to stand literally in the middle of your own artwork?
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. that might have been when I knew that I said, wow, this game's bigger than I thought it would be.
You know? Literally. Yeah. Well, oh, okay. So we started with art, got into this. We want to know about back then, yes, and also about, you know, today, what you've been up to and how you got to today. But want to know art at the time. How did you get into art early on? What were some of your early starts in creation of art? It's always fun to hear an origin story if you have one.
Yeah. You know, I've always been an artist or artistically inclined. My mother was an artist formerly trained. She didn't end up doing it as a career, but she did attend art school and is extremely talented. And my father was an engineer, and so I had, you know, I have these two sides of my brain, and I had a couple different paths that I could have gone for a career, you know, later on, either, you know, pursuing a more artistic side or more technical side. And but I've always been artistic. My sister's extremely artistic. She touches anything, and it's amazing. Right. And so it kind of runs in the family. And from a very early age, I've drawn and painted and sculpted and whatever suited my fancy. And it kind of was just a natural thing. And I found that I had some natural talent there. You know, I surrounded myself with friends who also like to do these similar things. I started gaming at a very young age as well. And a lot of those, my gamer friends were also very artistically inclined.
Sure. Okay. Well, you had a contemporaries, if you will. So who were some people that you really looked into? Obviously, Ian Miller, you mentioned, as one. Any other people that really stood out to you as being seminal or earlier on that like really pushed you into getting, you know, improving your early work?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, as far as fantasy art goes, I'm a huge, as many people are, Frazetta fan.
Right, right.
Very instrumental in my interest in fantasy art. I like all types of artists. You know, my favorite classical artists are like the Flemish realists.
Sure. Okay.
But I can kind of roll with it all, you know. And I think good art is good art, and it doesn't really matter, you know, what genre or it is. But you know, you had those old guys, you know, in that fantasy space, you know, the Ken Kellys and the Frazettas and the Borises and those kind of people that were very, I've got some big, Frazetta prints on my wall, and I still marvel at the soul that comes across in those pieces, you know.
I felt like 1,000 seconds just dropped there where you said Frank Frazetta, and I'm like, oh my God, he doesn't have originals on his wall, does he? Oh my God.
Yeah, well, close. You know, I've got a signed print that has a annotated illustration on the bottom of it. So it's an original. Yeah,
that's more than most people. Oh boy, I almost just died there.
Ooh. It's interesting that Tom, to hear you describe it that way, because you know, my cousin is a musician, and he hangs out with a lot of other musicians, and they talk about music in a very similar way, where it's not so much, oh, I really like this genre. They're just like, I like good music. And it's interesting to think about it from, you know, an artist perspective. You know, like, that's what you're looking for, right? Just like good art. That's what's interesting.
Yeah, you know, I think art should move you. And it doesn't really matter. You know, some people are moved by art that looks like, you know, is technically perfect and looks like a photograph. Some people like blank white canvases, you know. So, sure. But it's really whatever moves you, whatever, you know, stirs that emotion in you. And I think, you know, art visual art, like any other art, you know, it kind of it attaches to yourself emotionally at some time in your life, you know, fairly typically. I think that's the attraction of like a lot of this old older magic art, for instance, is that is where people were at that time in their lives, you know, when they first experienced this stuff.
It's like a golden nostalgia of sorts, you know. The people that love the pulp comics were like, oh, they were the best. And then you read, then you're like, well, at the time, yes, they were very, very great.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing about like older magic art that really, for whatever reason, grabs me is it creates this old school storybook kind of feel. So when you look at the cards, they almost look like they were pulled right out of like some kind of old or ancient spell book or something like that. You know, like just how the art plays with the frame and the old style of the frame and the lettering and just everything about those old cards to me feels very like archaic and almost as if, you know, it's something that has existed for thousands of years and I just stumbled upon it somehow.
Right. Yeah. Well, now you're dating me. But you know, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I feel the same way about a lot of that old, the older magic art is, you know, it's very nostalgic for me as well. Of course, I know a lot of these artists or have at least met many of them, and some of them are good friends to this day. But you know, it's a journey back when you check out all those old pieces. You know, it's pretty cool.
So speaking of journey, how did you make the transition from being a magic artist to working at Wizards?
Okay, well, there's a bit of a story there. So the original Magic art director was a fellow by the name of Jesper Mierforce, who you guys know of. And he was an old friend of mine, friend of the family, actually. His Swedish family and my Swedish family both immigrated from Sweden to the United States. And we lived in the same community. In fact, we grew up on the same street.
Oh my God.
So he's literally been a lifelong friend of mine. I've been a friend with him longer than any other person. And so, you know, he was also, you know, he was responsible for getting me into Dungeons and Dragons back in the 70s.
Sure.
We did war gaming with miniatures. We made our own games. We would sit around and draw pictures until the wee hours, you know, immersed me in a lot of pop culture, other things. So really, you know, he's really responsible for largely for my love of the whole genre, let alone this game industry. So but anyway, he had been doing work for this little company out of their basement. Working for Peter Atkinson.
It's funny.
He had told me, hey, you know, I'm doing this artwork, you know, this artwork for this, this little tiny, role-playing game publisher. And I think that, they're really going to be something someday. And I said, okay, yeah. And, and then he tapped him. He said, hey, would you mind doing some little color illustrations for this game that we're working on? And I said, yeah, it's not, you know, I really, you know, although I feel like I can competently illustrate some things, I wasn't doing it professionally or anything like that. And I thought, oh yeah, I'll do some little things for you. No problem. And so I, started working on some pieces, and then he pulled me in and said, hey, you know, we could really use some more help. And, you know, I want to put together a magazine, and I need some help sorting art, and I need some help, et cetera, et cetera. So I started helping him out a little bit at his house with some of the work that he was doing on what turned out to be the original, the alpha version of Magic the Gathering.
Right.
And at the time, like I said, Peter was and a few other people were at Peter's basement. It was like Rhett and Tukwila Federal Way, something like that area of Seattle. and I was helping him out on this stuff, and then of course I did some illustrations for them, and this thing, the rest is kind of history, you know, kind of took off, pretty well known story there, but it was a little time later, and I'd been helping him do some work on what became the first Duelist magazine, and we were actually doing some design work on his computer in his basement, and they'd been working on expansions and so on, and he said, hey, you know, we're at a point now, this game's really taking off, where we'd like to offer you a job. And at the time, I was working doing production art at a porcelain enameling factory.
Okay.
Where we would do graphics for like signs and displays and public art. So I was actually working with some rather big fine artists and so on to kind of realize their work, helping them to produce their work and for like large scale sculptures and so on.
Okay.
And yeah, it's kind of a cool business, you know, and at the time, but you know, the business, you know, the owner of the company was a little hokey and the pay wasn't great and so on, although I liked what I was doing. And I said, you know, well, if you can match the salary that I'm making, I'll come and work for you. And he came back like 3 days later and said, we'll match your salary. When can you start?
Oh,
and I thought about, yeah, and I was a little frightened because, you know, this is a brand new company. But I had, of course, seen the Magic product, and I saw the potential there, and I saw the other products that were rolling out. And I thought, yeah, you know, I got to take a shot here. If I don't take a chance now, I'm not going to leave where I'm at. So I said, okay, put in my notice to this other company, and I joined Wizards like 2 weeks later.
Okay, and you've been there pretty
well. And this was in I started. It was right at the beginning of 1994 at Wizards, and so they had just moved out of the basement and signed a lease on a building in Renton, not too far away from where Wizards is today. And I was here at Wizards until 2001. And then I left for 5 years, but I was still working in the industry. I went off and started working for trading card game producer, manufacturer.
Yep.
Doing technical production for them. That's Cardamundi. That's the company that produced the original Magic, a Belgian company. And so I went off and worked for those guys for a while, and did a little bit of consulting as well. And then they lured me back into Wizards again. So it kind of feels like I never... And I came back at 2006, but it kind of feels like I never left, because I was, even when I was working for Cardamundi, I was working on Wizards products.
Interesting. So you've really kind of been connected the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the grand scheme of things, so many, like, especially artists, they may work in-house for a little while. They might do a little bit of concept art, and then they usually go on and do other creative things. You're really the anomaly there.
I mentioned that I have this creative side and then this technical side to my brain. And I said my father was an engineer. He was a aircraft engineer for Boeing, actually, which is kind of what lured him to Seattle from Sweden. Okay. And how we ended up landing here. But so I have this technical side, and I was very interested in how things get done, in addition to the artistic piece. And so my role here at Wizards is I've always worked in what we call now operations. We used to call it production, where I'm responsible for getting the cards made. So working with suppliers to produce all of the card products that we produce, and not only all the card products, but all of Wizards products. So this is books and novels and miniatures, when we did a lot of that, and etc.
So operations, I mean, that's a pretty broad category. Could you give us like an idea of what your, I don't know, like a sample day might be in the operations?
I have a team of people. My team does product engineering and quality for specifically those pieces of operations. We also have like logistics, moving the stuff around. We've got purchasing,
right,
etc. here. And so a sample of my day, you know, we get requirements from a brand team, and we work to develop specifications that can be manufactured, and then we contact suppliers and work with them with those specifications to put together production plans, schedules, production plans. We approve all materials, collation for these randomized card products all runs through my engineering team. We do all specialty processes, and this is like printing foil cards and doing foil stamping and doing special varnishes and all double kinds of wacky stuff like that. You know, we have to have lots of different printing capability, those kinds of things. And then we work with their quality people to ensure that they actually are doing what we intended. So, you know, make sure that the quality is up to snuff deliver a high quality product for all of our fans and consumers out there.
So you probably could have been on one of the maybe cross-functional teams that is working on recyclable packaging and how to source that or how to make sure that doesn't impact the cards. I mean, that seems to be all within your world, I'd assume.
Yes, it does. we do all the packaging design, engineering for the packaging, all those pieces. So
I'm sure things don't rush upon delivery to make sure the plastic is doesn't cloud up or any of those things. I'm sure you guys test all of that.
Oh yeah, you know, putting in sustainable materials, all of that is runs through my team, and you know who to blame. when these things go south, you know, more often than
we won't ask about those things, but yeah, we get you. We know.
Yeah, you know, more often than not, things go well.
So, Tom, so what is your favorite part of creating, like a magic card or magic product that, you know, that doesn't involve the art or mechanics or anything like that? Like, is it setting up the collation and the randomization of the sheets and figuring that out? Is it trying to understand, like, you know, the best way to do packaging? Like, is there an aspect there that you enjoy the most?
Yeah, you know, I really enjoy, working with suppliers to solve a production problem. You know, this is like testing a new material, delivering something that hasn't been done before. And we've pioneered a lot of, you know, and this could be in print, it could be in packaging. I think we've done quite a few. You know, pretty cutting edge things over the years, that even if they had been done, they hadn't been done for these kinds of products. And that's pretty cool to be part of that, you know, and that could be something like a new sustainable material. It could be a process like, custom holograms, that are produced in, like, printed in register on cards, things like that, you know.
Okay, so like a pre-release printing as foils in the pre-release promos, for example.
Yeah, exactly. Something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Or kind of when we're pushing the envelope, you know, that's when I'm happiest. I love solving problems, and my team too. We're pretty fearless. You know, I think that we do a lot of things that other companies might not touch, but we like the challenge, you know?
Oh, that sounds so fun. Like, we don't generally hear about that. And that's part of why we exist as Snack Time, as a podcast, is that we hear so much about R&D, you hear so much about design, but you don't often hear about the other aspects in the gaming industry. Like, there are accountants that work for you that, you know, do payroll, like those people exist too, or the people that work in operations, which is this such a broad term. And it's really great to hear about those sort of aspects. When I worked at Fantasy Flight, there's whole teams that are literally just working on making sure an arm doesn't fall off or the X-Wing doesn't melt, you know, on the way to a store. It's enlightening to see that, especially for Magic players, to say, oh, well, there's 100 other jobs out there. You guys just may not know about them.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly right. You know, and I sympathize with those guys that have to make sure that the X-Wing wings don't fall off.
Oh, my God. Oh, man.
you know, it's but it's true, you know, especially the stuff made in China. It gets loaded into a giant metal box and floats across the equator.
It's always a boat. It's always a boat.
And, you know, and the inside of that thing is who knows how hot. And then it gets to the other side, and then it might go into the cargo hold of a plane and be frozen, flying wherever it has to go. And so these products have to survive getting where they're intended.
Right. And you don't think about that, like, oh, cards could have 100 issue. It's on paper. Like, you're shipping paper over months and months. And yet production doesn't really ever happen. You don't hear of, like, oh, we lost a whole magic set to a typhoon. Like, you don't really hear those things ever, you know, to say shortage avocado.
Yeah, you know, we worry about a lot of these things. You know, we worry about a lot of the things that are important to magic Magic fans, you know, and things like card curl and corner edge quality,
right,
and you know, and print fidelity and those things, you know, there's a lot of, we sweat the details, you know, every day.
Well, I bet you do. It's just like, oh man, can we just get those? Does you have like that person on your team that's like, hey, we should cut these alpha corners for Tom, and they know.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. You know, you can't blame me for that decision. That one happened before my time.
So.
Fair enough.
So Tom, when you have all this time that you're working out, you know, these different kind of operational problems, like do you ever take a step back and just do some art? Like, do you ever take time to paint anymore? Or?
Yeah, you know, I do. I still do a little drawing. I haven't done a lot of, 2D painting in a while. I do a bit of photography. I do paint a lot of miniatures. Actually, I'm into tabletop miniature gaming.
I was sure. Just going to ask so you that because you specified 2D painting, and I was like, so there's 3D painting somewhere. 3D painting is coming.
So I've been painting a lot of miniatures. So I play tabletop games with my son and another gaming group, and you know. Cool, you know, fantasy based ones or historical stuff. And it's a nice outlet for me. So I really enjoy, you know, I'm doing a lot of miniature painting, you know, currently. It's kind of a cool outlet.
So what's your favorite miniature right now that you have, that you've painted?
My favorite one that I have right now, you know, I just finished Krios 3, who is a war caster for the War Machine game.
Sure.
And
company by Matt Wilson and Co. Absolutely.
Yeah. And Matt, I've known for a long time. Know a lot of people over at his company, because he's of course an old magic artist and former Wizards employee as well. And they got you know, a really cool cool set of games that those guys make. And so you know we. I keep in touch with a lot of people in the game industry, you know, all over this area. There's a ton of them in the Seattle area. And I try to support them and play their games too, you know, whenever I can.
Well, they might have something you don't know of yet. I mean, there's ideas to be had out there, clearly.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I have some big questions. So, you know, we're getting close to where we need to be. I work a lot in this artist corner of the community sector, if you will. And honestly, Tom, you are one of the most people brought up all the time that I never have an answer for. And I have two questions. First question, how do I get Tom to sign a card of mine? First one. And I'm always like, I don't know. And the second one, people are always curious about your paintings. Always curious. They're like, did he sell them? Did he hide them? Did he lose them? And I'm like, I don't know. Would love to hear, like, when you go to a Grand Prix, do people stop you and ask you to sign things? Do tournament organizers, you know, still call you up and be like, yeah, we know you're an operations guy. We know you got a day job, but would you come out to an event? Do you still get that from people?
Yeah, I do actually. I get, invitations periodically to go do events. I don't have a lot of time to do that. And honestly, I don't feel like, I feel like if I was going to do more events, I would want to ramp up my ability to sit for hours and do sketches on the back of white back cards or sure, you know, custom tokens or have something to offer, either, you know, for sale or free or whatever to fans. Other than just signatures, you know, because it feels like just to go someplace and sign some cards is a little bit half-assed, you know.
Well, I mean, I get that, but there is a need, there is a want that is, it's real. Right. I mean, it's the question of, say we were to have, you know, Tom invited to an event. Tom doesn't necessarily have it at a table because you know you don't have side images and prints and lithographs and all that stuff. But say. Say Ant and I set up an art show, magic art, concept art, cool other stuff in it, whatever. Could we sneak you into it maybe get, you know, Tom to stop by, might sign a couple cards, might talk about some art on a panel or something. Do you think that could be possible in the next, I don't know, couple years?
Yeah, absolutely. That could be possible. And I'm not opposed to going to events and signing cards and so on. It's really just a time thing for me, getting the time to do so. And, you know, and I used to do quite a few events back in the day. And so there are a bunch of signed cards floating around out there. But obviously I don't do many of these events anymore. I'm not opposed to signing cards in small batches.
Okay.
I do have some people who send them to me. I prefer to have them sent to me here at Wizards.
Okay.
And I will sign cards in small batches as long as people have that self-addressed stamped envelope and that I can send them back to them.
All the necessary, you know, logical things that are reasonable.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's something to know if someone's completing a set or something. There is a historic part of this, and, you know, I think it's become a little more real, Tom, in the last, you know, 2 years that artists aren't going to live forever. I mean, part of our game is that, you know, it's built-in scarcity of rarities, and, well, even the artists themselves are now becoming a rarity, that pushing us to events to say, I don't know if I want to go to Grand Prix Las Vegas, but I know these two artists that don't come there very often are going. So just, this is something that we notice in the art community quite a bit to say, like, okay, how can we reach out to this person, you know, or have that something in there to do that. Same goes for the playmats. I mean, would you ever consider making some playmats? Because now, you know, they are, some of them are available to do that.
I definitely would. And, I've given it a little bit of thought. I said, you know, I should probably take a look at that.
Snow-covered mountain.
Royal assassin.
Make it happen.
People love that. You know, people love that piece, and it's kind of funny because that was a very quick piece compared to the other three mountains that were in Ice Age. That's cool. The and as far as originals go, I think back to your other question, sure, was I do actually, I own most of my originals. There are a few that have been sold and some that have been gifted to loved ones and
family members and so such. On.
Yeah. Yeah. But I have many of those originals and I get inquiries about those as well. And at some point I might, you know, find it in my heart to part with them, but I enjoy holding on to them for right now, but there are a few that I would probably part with, you know, down the line.
Someone might ask you to say, hey, your son's going to college. You got all these patents.
Right. Yeah. And that's coming up too. Yeah. My son, he's 13. So, you know, we can do the math on that. College is coming up pretty soon.
Noted.
Yeah. And you know, and really what I want though, is for people who are buying the art is that it's somebody who really loves the piece, that it means right. something to them and that they're going to hold on to it. Not somebody's looking to flip it or whatever, you know?
Right. Right. There is that aspect in any, you know, art community. As I look on, I'm in my room and I have the panorama from Tony Roberts from Mirage, the forests, all of them.
Cool.
I mean, I remember playing my first deck, you know, there's always a story and though that's kind of I'd like to think that's the magical Christmas land. When you find a collector, that's like, this has meaning to me.
Right.
I have a story behind it. I'm keeping this forever. This is going to become part of like our family and it gets passed down. Like we're not quite at that stage where art is going to have provenance from like father to son or from mother to daughter, but that's going to be eventually a thing. And I don't know. I think that's just kind of an exciting time that the game has endured this long, other than, you know, some of the 1990s CCGs that came and went, and you can buy the art pretty easily now. But for Magic, it's there's stories built into this. There's the top deck moment that is going to live on for years and years.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just find that to be such a unique thing compared to a lot of other games where there isn't a singular, I don't know, miniature that was created by the clay sculptor or something.
It's not only that too, right? Like, you know, we have so many formats that pull from these cards from the dark and from, you know, Alpha and whatever, like Commander. And, you know, while these images were created in the early 90s, like, they're on people's kitchen tables right now, you know? So there's still a lot of interaction going on. There's still a lot of meaning being built into those cards that, you know, didn't exist yesterday. And so there are definitely kids out there right now playing Magic with their parents, and, you know, they're building a relationship with these really old images, which is pretty unique for a game, I would say.
Yeah. It's very cool. I mean, you know, I'm astounded how long, you know, you know, it's a Magic that's been around, you know, of, I'm really astounded at how well received the art continues to be from these really, really, really old sets, you know. And as I said, I think it's just become a thing where it's created, these people have an emotional attachment to the stuff, and it'd be really cool to have another generation have that attachment too. That's pretty awesome, I think.
I mean, look at your card art for Capsize. I mean, it was just used in the online game for Tempest Remastered. So there's this whole new generation that's like, who's this Tom Wainerstrand guy? And they're like, oh, you know, someone might explain. They're like, oh, yeah, he did a ton of these cool ships back in the day. Like, you should check them out. They're super cool.
And yeah, you know, and the Capsize, I like that piece too. I'm not selling that one. I get some inquiries on that one too, but it's cool. You know, the old the ship stuff, I get a lot of people like the ships.
So okay, so we had one, before we go, we have one question. We threw something out to Twitter to be like, what would you guys ask? And people are, and a friend of ours, his name's Dave Lee Durfington, he's a friend, lives in Toronto, and he's curious about the card Skeleton Ship. Just curious, what's the story behind that card art?
Hi Dave, by the way. That's a story, Skeleton Ship. So that one was very interesting. It originally was assigned to me as a ship piece, and what the art director wanted at the time, I believe, it was either Jesper or Sandra at the time, said, you know, do something similar to the pirate ship, and but skeleton-y. And so I started working on it. I did some sketches, and then I had an idea, and I went over and said, well, because I had been talking to Amy Weber about doing some kind of a cool crossover piece. Okay. And so we agreed, Amy and I, we said, hey, why don't we just both do this piece? And I handed my sketch over to her, and she sketched a little bit more on it. And then she handed it back to me, and I started painting a little bit on it. And then I handed that back to her. And so we literally handed this piece back and forth between us, and kind of co-painted, you know, co-created this thing. And you can see elements of her style and my style both in that piece. And it was kind of a unique thing. It's pretty cool. It was fun. It's the first and only time I've ever done that with another artist, by the way.
So really, it's an artist jam piece where they, you know, kind of work together on getting the piece
done. I gotta know, whose idea was it to have skeletons riding sea turtles?
Because that was an Amy. That's an Amy Weber thing right there, all the way. Yeah, Amy. That was Amy's deal. And I thought that was pretty cool. I was like, oh, yeah, you know, skeletons on sea turtles.
I can just imagine Tom sitting there, like, sketching this really intricate, you know, pirate ship that kind of looks like bones with a rib cage, and sliding it across the table to Amy. And she's like, you know what this needs? Some skeletons on sea turtles. And just like, what?
Yeah. That was, you know.
Maybe a dolphin.
Yeah, that's kind of how it went. Maybe a dolphin, I think.
Oh, my God, that's amazing. Well, Tom, we're out of time for the day. Want to thank you so much for making time, because I know you got to get home, got to get food ready for the family. Any other closing words for us today?
I just want to say thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you guys. And for all the Magic fans out there, you know, we absolutely, you know, appreciate all of you. And it's so cool. The Magic community is such a great thing. Great players, great community, and such a cool thing to be part of. And I feel real fortunate. So I wanted to thank everybody out there also for all of your support over the years.
Oh, that's fantastic. Okay, well then to close, Ant, where can people find you when this thing goes live?
All right, people can find me on Twitter at AntTestator, or they can go to my website at AntTestator.com.
This will be up on Gathering Magic real quick here on, of course, Vorthos Fitting Wednesdays. You can find me at Vorthos Mike on Twitter, or just try to attempt to spell my last name, Linneman. You'll get close. It'll pop up at me, guaranteed. But other than that, thanks again to Tom. Really, really, really appreciate the time. This took us a while to get sorted. Super happy about that. Wanted to take a big thanks to Trick Jarrett for setting it up for us. He was my first editor, so of course, wonderful to work again with him on this. And we want to thank our patrons. Patreon, really, really fantastic way for us content creators to get sound improved. And, well, validation is always nice. And, of course, we have a little couple things down the road coming. But other than that, it's Mike and Ant, and thanks for watching today.